Namnatseya Bhisma Vadadru. This is a prayer that Dhamma composed for Namnatseya, for the conductor. And this has to do, in general, with all the sauce that Jews will suffer throughout the long roads. And he laments the same way as we had earlier, where he said, God, why have you forsaken us? And here also he uses the same expression. In chapter 10, he used the expression, Lomo Hashem Tamed Melachot, right? Why do you, God, stand far away? And Kalim Lihitos Batsora, and you hide yourself amongst the holy places when we have troubles. So he uses the same idea here. It says, I don't know until when Hashem Tishkochenu Netzach, will you forever forget us? Netzach means forever. How long will you forget us? Will it be forever? The idea is when Hashem doesn't intervene, it's as if we said before, Talim, he holds and hides himself. Hiding himself, he forgets us. Or people will think that God has forgotten us because he lets us be suffering, permit us to suffer so long and go. That on a pastil, for nefam mimenu. And how long will you hide your eyes from us? Now, again, you use the dual phrase, like in 10 it uses Tamet Levachot, standing far away, Kalim, hiding yourself. Here he uses the expression of Tishkochenu, forgetting, and Tastir in the expression of Tastir, hiding. Now, the Malbim does make a distinction between both of these phrases, and it's of interest. The Malbim says that divine retribution can be of a double and a two fashion. One is siluk hashchina, that means a hashgacha, that God removes his supervision from us. And when he removes his supervision from us, we are totally abandoned to the vicissitudes, to the difficulties that nature brings. I think we mentioned previously, I think last week, that if the HaKadosh Baruch Hu would not help a person, he would be so exposed and so open to all kind of stumbling spiritually, physically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu also. God helps him. Like you said, that God took away his supervision from David, because David called him a Macy's, that he enticed him. So we saw that immediately David fell. And that's part of the salvation that God has hashgacha. But once there is a total silut hashgacha, and man is abandoned to the haphazard chance that occurs in nature, so he's almost lost. That's what David calls out, and he says, I don't know. That's called one aspect of Hester Ponim. The second aspect of Hester Ponim, which is less harsh, that's a concealment of God's face. It means that God does not remove himself, the mountain says, but he conceals himself. So what's wrong when he conceals himself? Then he says, this person who is punished with this type of Hester Ponim, he is really supervised by divine providence, but Hashem conceals himself and the person doesn't realize that he's supervised by Hashem. Then if any accident happens, he thinks that it's only a chance. It's not a message from the Rabbeinu Shlomo. And this is a very important point, because really the concept is that in Le'olam, if the person sees she Yisuim Boim Olam, that difficulties are happening to him, Yifashvish b'maisa, he should examine his deeds. We discussed this concept a few weeks ago when we spoke of an illness and the idea of having doctors, or the idea of returning to God. The idea of an illness or the idea of troubles was that immediately a man should examine his deeds. And people who have literal, simple emuna, they always think that way. I mentioned that time among the Sfaradim especially. If something happens, they immediately attribute it to their deeds, and they recognize that a person has to mend his actions, and they try to analyze, what did I do wrong? This is, they have a basic, simple emunah, but life is a lot more complicated. And this is where the second Hester Ponim comes in. This would be great if we would have this belief, right? If we would have this belief, so immediately when something would happen, Then we would examine our deeds with better ourselves. The problem is, when there's a test of funny, he conceals himself and he leaves no trace or clue. And therefore, when this happens, we say it's only a mikra. The difference from korah to mikra is the aleph and the hey. Korah, call, is spelled kufresh aleph. Mikra, chance, is korah, chance, kufresh hey. Kirsch speaks in the Torah a few places. He says there's no such thing as mikra, as a chance happening. It so happened. It was planned that this should happen. But it happened in such a fashion, he says, when the mikra seems to you that it wasn't planned, but really God planned it. Every korah is also calling to you. It's calling to you when it's clear, you hear it, kufei shalat. When it's not clear, it comes korah, for chance, it's a hey. But if you think into it, the hey is really an aleph too. He uses this in a number of places. And that's where in the Tevet also it says, if you go with me to carry by chance, I will also come to you by chance. It means if you don't really appreciate God's guiding a person. So therefore, it won't be clear. And a person will overlook the message. He won't understand it. Now, that's why David HaMelech speaks of both aspects here. He says, Aronah tishkocheinu netza, forgetting me, meaning turning away, total abandonment. The second phrase is, that really you didn't abandon me total, but you hid yourself from me, and therefore when it's really a korah or message, I can't appreciate the message. It's mikra. It looks to me as if it's a perchance. I don't really appreciate that there is no such thing as a perchance happening. And this is the greatest concealment that causes a person difficulty. There's a medrash, the famous medrash on this pasuk. David HaMelech says four times, if you'll notice, the word Arono. In the next passage it reads, Arono, let's look at the next sentence, three. Arono oshis eitzais benavshi. How long will I have to set different thoughts in my spirit? Meaning, my spirit is depressed, and I'll always go ahead and look for ways to escape from the depression and the despair that I feel. He's saying this is a result by the fact that God has disappeared from him, supposedly. And when God disappears from him, so his whole life becomes gloomy. So a person has to look for Asus Benafshi to go ahead and to get me out of my despondency and my despair. The truth is, in our practical life, we see this too. There are some people who we would categorize as tzaddikim. And they're really always happy. That fact that they have this strong emunah, the belief in God, whatever happens, really, they're happy. I mean, there are degrees, God forbid, sometimes of a tragedy. But in general, they go around, there's a meaning to their life. If you notice by us, by the average person, you're only happy when you're in an exhilarated mood, when you're in an up and a high. But if you're at a plain level, and that's a problem with children, sometimes, you know, in school children, they're always, when they have a big trip coming, they're happy with something special, they're happy. But then it's boring, you know. Youngsters always need something bubbly. So there has to be something within you that makes you bubble. Now, if you have the plain, boring plateau, what's going to make it bubble? But if a person realizes that there is a spirit of God within him and he's really involved, right, and thought with his thoughts and with his accomplishments, he's living in God's world, he's performing miracles. If he has God going along with him, so then he has a certain spirit which lifts him up and which makes every day meaningful and not just a boring day, correct? Every day is really meaningful. It would be meaningful when you get up in the morning, and we spoke in the past, people who are granted the gift of life, they get up in the morning and they see the stars and the sun and so on, it's extremely meaningful to them. Because there's a purpose, you know, they think they're not just withering away time. Everything they see has value, has meaning. So if a person has the spirit of God within him, so he doesn't have to look for artificial schemes to be able to lift himself out of the despair. But David HaMelech is saying, Arono oshis eitzes benafshi. I always have to go and find certain ideas and certain ways to give a little excitement, schemes to elevate my spirit. And Yogain Dilvavi, there's melancholy even in the day. Dilvavi, in my spirit, Yomam in the day. The Malm says that the day refers to his moment of success, right? that Yoma means when it's bright. Normally they learn that the day means even in the day when the person can ordinarily leave his cares and worries behind, the Radak says, he's always going around in anguish, even when during the daytime. Although you could question Radak, because normally the day is when a person has worries. At night, sometimes he can relax from his worries. But the mountain says that the day refers to the moment of success. Day symbolizes success. So normally at the moment of success, the person would be happy, one would think. But this person is going around with this spirit of despondency, so because he feels even if he has good fortune, there's still something missing. So he really can't enjoy, he really can't give himself over and enjoy the moment of his success. So not only on the plane doesn't he have any acceleration, any feeling, any elation, but even on the highs, we'll say, when he's really riding high and he should really feel happy and joyful, there's something lacking in him. This is the second Arona. Arona Oshis, I mean, Arona Oshis Eitze Benashi, because Yogen Dovodi Yomo, even during the success, I have this spirit of despair. Arona Yorum Evi Olai. How long will my enemies prevail and triumph over me? So four times David HaMelech, in sentence 2 and 3, calls out the word Arona until when? The Medrash notes, and this is similar to what we had in the previous chapter, that it said there that David HaMelech says, Lama Hashem Tamid Miracho. Remember the Medrash said there in chapter 10? Hashem said, you didn't seek me when I was looking for you. So therefore now, when you're looking for me, in the story of the innkeeper, there's a similar medrash here also. He says, Rav Yitzchak says, all of these lamenting of Arono, Arono, is midor kineged midor. Hashem said, I called out to you four times, Arono, until when? Until when? And you didn't answer me. In Shmos, we find the expression, Ad ono me'antem lishmor mitzvosai. Until long, this is the Midrash, until how long will you refuse to observe my mitzvos? And by Midbar, we also find God speaking against the children of Israel. How long will they question me and they will not believe in me? And we also find that Mosai la'edo aroazos. How long will this evil assembly continue to exist? So there are four times in Chumash where we find the expression that God demands of us, Arono. How long will you not recognize me? How long will you speak evil against me? So in response to the fact that there are four times Arono, you will also, the Medrash say, call out four times Arono. How long? How long? And they all refer to the four exiles. How long? The first time refers to the Babel, the exile of Babel. The second to the exile of Persia. The third to the Greek exile, the fourth to Edom, the fourth. So David HaMelech alludes to the troubles here four times out of order that the Jews will suffer in the four exiles because they, according to the Medrash, they refuse to respond to the Arona of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then he continues in sentence 4. Hapito, look, Aneni, respond. Hashem Elokai, God, my God. This is out of frustration. He calls out to God, don't turn around, turn back, look. Like a child, you know, who's petitioning and pleading with the parent isn't paying much attention, and he just saying, look. Aneni, answer me. Hashem Elokai, Ohiro Enai, Kemishan Amorbis. Give me light, right, in my eyes, enlighten my eyes, Penishana Modes, lest if you do not enlighten my eyes, so I will slumber, I will die, or I will slumber into death. Now, David HaMelech speaks that if really, like we said before, if God doesn't give him, if God looks at him and concerns himself with him, so he will give a certain light, a certain levity in his eyes. And therefore I will continue to live. But the Malbim says, when Hashem abandons the sinner, the flame like slowly stinks, and the soul is left shriveled and lifeless. He says, David HaMelech says, enlighten my spiritual vision, lest my soul sink into spiritual death. It seems that a person who is living, who is vibrant, you can tell really from also his eyes, you know, the eyes are leavening. So he says, give me a certain light in my eyes, which will give me a reason to live. I'll feel that the Yizashgacha, the Shekhinah, and then I will live. However, otherwise, if you don't respond, if you don't enlighten my eyes, so therefore, I will fall into a slumber of death. The Radak says in a simple way that in the gloom of exile, God should give us the illumination to illuminate the oppression, to give us a purpose, to give us a purpose in life. Ben Yomar Avi, because my enemies will boast, you're faulty. If you don't do this, my enemies will say, you're faulty that I am successful. Sora Yogilu, my Sorim, will rejoice, Kiemo, because I will falter. The Malm points out that there are two types. There is Oye, there is an enemy, and there is also Sorai. The Oye, the enemy, is one who is a foe. He bears hatred in his heart, but he actually doesn't bring about any harm upon those he hates. It means he's really a covert hater of the Jew. The Tsar, the tormentor, is one who actually acts out his feelings, and he torments the other individual. So here David HaMelech says that we've fallen to such a sorry state, a sorrow state, that the Eivad, the enemy, the foe, who ordinarily would be acting or feeling, will say covertly, he wouldn't openly express his animosity or his hatred. So this enemy will say, Yecholti, I'm successful. He never dreamt of his success. And therefore, Tzorah, the one who was waiting to come along and to actually cause damage, so he will be happy. He doesn't even have to lift a finger because I have slumped, I've actually faltered already. Emok, I've slipped. So that means the Levi was able to defeat me. And the Tzorah will not even have to what? Will not have to do anything. Really, how could the Ayyub is only a hidden enemy. How could he really defeat me? Because it depends. He defeats me if he's a hidden enemy. So he didn't do anything factual. So how's he actually going to defeat me? What does it mean? The idea is he could just look at me and I'll crumple. If I'm lacking any spirit of life, if I'm lacking faith in God, right, then I myself will crumple. So that means the first kind of an obstacle that I'll come into, the first kind of an antagonism that I'll find, even if it's not anything aggressive or oppressive, it's only hidden. And normally it would just fall off, it wouldn't make any impact upon me, right? But I will just crumble because I'm lacking the inner spirit. So therefore, my Avi will look at me, he'll just say, wait, he'll say, I hope you come in. Because you don't have to be a powerful sword to go ahead and to destroy me. The destruction will come from within me because I myself, as Dr. Melech says, up to sentence 5, he doesn't mention anything about the enemy. He just mentions his own despair and his own despondency, and he said that there will not be any direct intervention from God, if there will not be this illumination, then each and our mothers will slumber into a death. So therefore, if I do that, the Avi will think that he's the one that brought it about, because the fact is that he, even in his manner, not openly, not aggressive, actual, but just his hidden, subtle ways, he was able to destroy me. But the destruction really didn't come because of the Oye. Destruction was an inner destruction. And Sorai Yogilu, and the true enemy, will be happy, Kiyamot, because he is able to not do anything, and I will stumble or falter on my own. This will happen if God does not intervene. But Vani, Gavin HaMelech, concludes that they will be happy because they'll think that I have nobody to intervene on my behalf. But Vani, I always have Bechazda for the Tachti. I have Emunah and faith, the Chesed, that God with His mercy will give me the strength. Yogel Libi, I will rejoice, right? Bishua Secho, Yeshua Secha, in your salvation. Just like we said, Sora Yogilu, the word in the previous sentence, Yogilu, Gil, is more than real joy. Gil means when you get an unexpected present, just like the Sorai of the previous sentence is rejoicing because he doesn't even have to go to battle because the Oyeh took care of it. So it was unexpected. The same thing he says, Yogel Libi, I will rejoice. I will have rejoicing, the Malbim says, when a sudden unexpected piece of good news comes. David HaMelech says, although I always trusted in your kindness and I should not come as a surprise, but nevertheless, when the Yeshua, when the salvation actually occurs, I will rejoice as if it were an unexpected bonanza. The reason is because I am undeserving even kindness. So any merciful blessing is a surprise. So you see here, this is a very interesting concept. The Malbim tells us, hey, it's a contradiction. Batachti means I have faith in your chesed, in your intervention. If so, when it does come about, why should it be Yogel Libi? Why should it be Yogel Libi? Yogel Libi means, like he says, unexpectedly, and I'm overwhelmed because I didn't believe it. But he just said, Vani b'chazdecho v'tachti, that I do believe in your chesed, right? So the idea is that you have both thoughts. The person has absolute emunah, even in the moment when he is a human being. And he has, you know, we said there are various sentiments that a person has, and a person has to recognize both sentiments. Different, a person is complicated, and he can have different fleeting emotions. We spoke a few weeks ago about brachas, that you say a bracha dina emes, when bad news, and at the same time the person inherits something, a great inheritance, so he has this fleeting thought that passes through his mind. He has both emotions. He believes that God really will help him, but he feels really that he doesn't have any means or any reason to petition God or to hope that God will help, but he has the betachin. So therefore this person is really open and exposed to various emotions and sentiments that come through him. He says, I'm so far gone, yet I have faith, but at the same time, when your Yeshua, when your salvation comes about, I'm just human, and therefore I really couldn't expect any response, although I believed that there would be a response. And therefore, Yogel Libi Yeshua Sefa, when your Yeshua comes, there has to be, there is this feeling that I have. Or Shira Lashem, and therefore this will cause me to sing Shira to God. Why? Ki Gomo Oloi. Because, really, I consider myself undeserving, the Malbim continues, for any kind of a reward. And any reward that I receive, that itself will be a great thing. Now when God says that it is a gemul, that the fact that he will respond will be for that I am worthy of that, so then it's a greater feeling that indeed I am worthy of Hashem's dual wages, he said, for my faithful service, then I will be doubly happy and I will sing for joy. So the idea that the Malbim says when God responds and tells me that it's not truly out of chesed, but gemul, it's a form of compensation that he's paying me for my worth. So I'm not as humble, that means I'm not that totally bereft of any value or of any meaning, and therefore God feels that I am entitled to be saved, ki gomal aloi, so this will be another form of Ashira Lashem. Literally, without the Malbim, it would mean Ashira Lashem, I will sing to God, ki gomal aloi, for he has dealt kindly with me. Now this is a very simple phrase, right? A simple message in this psalm. I think the underlying thing that we can see from here is the theme that God's presence or God's lack of presence is enough to destroy the individual. That if God takes away the supervision, it's as if the person himself is already destroyed because there's this feeling of despair and despondency. So what gives the person the idea of life? The life that a person has is because he has emunah, he has the spirit of God within him.